This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
The Women's World Cup is less than a month away. The US women's national team are in camp, making final adjustments to their plans to invade Canada. Brace yourself for scenes of nationwide hysteria, very similar to the ones that gripped this nation during Brazil 2014. There is one not insignificant difference. This is a tournament we actually stand a chance of winning. To check in and gauge the temperature of the team, I recorded this pod special with Kelly O'Hara, a striker turned defender. Few players exhibit more joy in their performance than Kelly, no matter where she lines up on the field. Our guest today is a total footballer who possesses a defender's tenacity, a midfielder's engine, and a striker's soul. At the 2012 London Olympics, she played every minute of America's gold medal winning campaign. She's originally from Peachtree City, Georgia, a Stanford grad, a current New Yorker, but calling us from a car outside of Wahoos in Newport Beach, California, where the national team is currently training. Welcome to the pod, Kelly O'Hara.
Thank you.
How much of your day do you spend thinking about the World Cup? Do you get out of bed in the morning and get the tingles?
When I'm not getting out of bed in the morning and being pretty sore, I do get the tingles. And I would say that I wake up every morning thinking about it and fall asleep every night thinking about it. So it's kind of, and I think that would probably be the same for everybody on the team. It's kind of constantly on the brain. It can't not be, so.
Does it pervade your dreams at all? Do you find yourself dreaming World Cup dreams?
I haven't had any World Cup dreams, but I have soccer dreams a lot, that's for sure. But I think it's because it's, especially when we're in camp and it's our, 24/7. Yeah, I do have the soccer dreams. But no, I haven't had any, first game of the World Cup against Australia, looking at the kangaroos on the other side of the field, none of that yet.
At the risk of sounding a little Sigmund Freud on you, Kelly.
Yes.
Can you tell me about these soccer dreams?
Well, sometimes they go really well, and you're doing, you're playing, you're doing well, you score like a sick goal, but then, those are usually the ones I have, so I think that's a good thing that, that means like I have a positive mentality about how I'm feeling, my confidence is up, that sort of thing, but there have been one or two that go very poorly, but thankfully those haven't been happening lately, so I think that's a good thing.
I think it means we might. I'm not a dream analyst, but I think that means we're going to win the World Cup. Anyway,
I think so too.
Moving on. You played in the World Cup. You played against Sweden in the last cycle.
Yes.
I'm interested in players' experience of World Cup games because as a spectator, the World Cup just feels special. It's where memories are formed, legends are made. But as a player, once the whistle is blowing and that game's kicked off, mentally, does a World Cup game feel any different, or do you just quickly become engrossed in the play and it feels like any other game?
So for my only World Cup experience, which was, in 2011 in Germany and the 15 minutes I got to play against Sweden, it didn't go as well as I had hoped it would. I didn't feel like I played as well. I was extremely nervous, and I went into that World Cup not thinking that I would even see the field. I had the mentality of I'm a practice player. I'm going to cheer my teammates on, give the support I need to give. So, I think that I was a very, very new player. I didn't have a lot of experience. I barely had any caps at that point. So my only World Cup experience wasn't the best, and it was pretty nerve-wracking. The next year going into the Olympics, I'd gotten many more caps under my belt, that sort of thing, and it was completely different, and I feel, very comfortable now, and I think that going into this World Cup, it's business as usual, so yes, there is this, big excitement around the World Cup, but at the end of the day, I think hopefully everybody on the team, as soon as we cross the line, as soon as the whistle blows, it's it's another game and we're there to win it.
Business as usual. I love that. I mean, you mentioned you mentioned the Olympics 2012.
Yes.
With the US, you made a much documented but highly unorthodox positional switch from attacker to defender. Then coach Pia Sundhage persuaded you to move to outside back for the Olympics. You'd scored, you were a player who'd scored 24 goals in 35 under 20 international matches. That's just, I mean, it's just outstanding. You'd never played defender before you made that switch. To me, it sounds like Jamie Lannister learning to fight again after he'd lost his sword hand. How did you, how do you go about learning the new position at such an elite level?
It took a lot of kind of dedication. I mean, as does anything at this level. Pia basically told me your chance to make the Olympic team is going to be at an outside back. We need players at that position, and so I kind of took that and ran with it. And you know, every single day at practice, I came in and had something that I needed to work on or was focused on, and you know, needed to kind of tune up and that sort of thing. So, you know, it was a lot of film. It was a lot of watching other players, a lot of communication with the coaching staff, with the back line, with the goalkeepers. It wasn't easy, but I thankfully did it. I had a great support staff around me, and they helped me. People were patient, and I think that's what helped.
You made it look easy. It might not have felt easy, but every striker I've ever interviewed, they are singularly obsessed with goal scoring. I mean, their passion is only matched by like a Kardashian's focus on taking selfies. Scoring goals is their identity. You handled the change well on the field, but did it impact your sense of self?
I can't lie and say that it didn't. But I think that even when I did play forward, I took scoring a goal the same as getting an assist, you know. And for me as a forward, it was, as long as if we won the game, that's all that mattered, you know. Obviously you want to score and you feel like as a forward that is your singular goal to help the team, but at the end of the day it is a team sport, and if you get the win, that's all that matters. So as a forward, I was obsessed with scoring goals, but I also was obsessed with winning. And so I would basically, you know, if on the day I wasn't the one to score and I was the one to assist, or, you know, I helped in defense or in whatever way, that's all that mattered to me.
Any tackle you make, any throw-in you do beautifully, I just suggest you automatically just unveil your goal-scoring celebration that you used to use when you were a striker and just do it on the field. You're calling us from the national team's training camp. Can you give us a sense, 30 days out, what's the prime focus for a World Cup squad a month out? What are you working on?
So we just came into camp. Our first meeting with Jill was basically her saying, you know, our focus now is sharpening, fine tuning. You know, we've given you guys everything. We've, you know, laid out how we want to play, our style, our game plans, that sort of thing. But now it's just tweaking the little things and sharpening up of all the things that we've put into play these past, 9 months or so since Jill has come on as head coach.
I mean, Jill Ellis, the English-born American coach, part Margaret Thatcher, part Mary Poppins, all footballing supreme kind of tactical mindset. Under her, your team won the Algarve Cup, but you're also incredibly inconsistent on the field. From the inside, how do you understand that?
So it's interesting because I think that, you know, as a team going through a transition, whether it's a coaching transition or bringing in new players or implementing a new style, there's always going to be the critique from the outside because they don't really know the inner workings or what's going on a day-to-day. And obviously there's going to be some adjustment period, and I think that we've gone through that. And I would be concerned as a player if it was just smooth sailing the whole time, because when you do have to work through things and figure it out and it doesn't come easy, then you kind of get that resilience. And I think we've always had that, but I think it's important that we have, you know, gone through some hard times and we've come out the other side. And I feel like the style of play they've asked us to play and, you know, the things that the new tools they've given us, I think are going to be super helpful in the World Cup. And I think that we're coming together at the right time. We're peaking at the right moment.
What new tools is the team developing?
With Pia, there was very distinct style of play. It was a lot of switching the point of attack. And, you know, sometimes we would play that long ball. And that's still there. We still have those things. But we kind of have a different style, you know. There's a lot of different expectations for the different positions. And I think that's it's going to be exciting to watch because I don't think we've ever necessarily played the way we're going to play in the World Cup.
Well, once the World Cup kicks off, you're playing Australia, the Matildas, 10th in the world, Sweden, led by your former coach, Pia Sundhage, and Nigeria, the best team out of Africa. How much time have you spent looking at game film of your opponents and preparing for each game? When do you get down to that stage?
Yeah, that, we haven't done that yet. I think that at this point, we won't start looking at Australia or Sweden or Nigeria until we get up to Canada. We might start going over it a little bit sooner, but yeah, we kind of just look at the opponent we're playing and form a game plan around that. So I think that'll probably be the style that we take into the World Cup.
Can we talk a little bit about camp and the culture of camp? Can we get a roommate update? We're trying to build a Google map of the US WNT roommate networks. Last month, we had Heather O'Reilly on. She said that she and Megan Rapinoe normally room together, but for whatever reason, you and her were roommating, which are tough shoes to fill. Can you give us a little update on the old roommate situation?
Yeah, Heo and I were roommates last camp. I'm rooming with Sid right now, and sometimes it changes when we go to a different city, but I think that we'll probably actually stay together, but it's all dependent on what our GM, who he puts us with. So it's kind of, yeah, I mean, I think it's whoever, you know, you get the sheet that says your roommate on, and that's your roommate.
That's how I got married. I'm a great believer in arranged marriage. How'd you kill all the downtime in camp?
We don't have that much downtime with the amount of training we have every day and meetings and then eating. I would say that takes up the majority of our days. But we played board games. Catan, Settlers of Catan is like pretty popular amongst some people on the team.
Oh, who's the best?
I would say I'm the best, but that's probably not true. Tobin's pretty good.
I would have guessed
Whitney's
Tobin.
Pretty good.
I would have guessed Tobin would make a great settler. I'm interested in the culture of a World Cup squad. Last summer, I had the chance to talk to Tim Howard, and he talked about how odd an experience it was as a 35-year-old bloke then to spend 2 months hanging out with 18, 19, 20-year-olds. Your squad has got a wealth of experience. Rampone, Rodriguez, Box, they're all mothers. Can you describe the different groups that make up the collective within the squad?
Yeah, I mean, we do, Piercy's going to be, I think, 40 when the World Cup comes around in June. And I think our youngest player is either Mo. Yeah, I think Mo is our youngest player, Morgan Bryan. So we do span some generations. But I think it's great. You know, we do have moms on the team, and they get to bring in their little ones. And that's so fun because it kind of just takes away from the stress of the camp. You can have a bad practice or even a good practice, and you come back into the meal room afterwards and you just get to hang out with these little toddlers and babies, and it puts things into perspective for you. But I would say that in general our team gets along really well, and you know, there's not necessarily the olds or the youngs, you know, we're all grouped together.
I had a mental picture of the cafeteria scene in Mean Girls, and you've just completely shattered that for me. But when you speak to sports agents, many have already calculated exactly how much endorsement money the breakout stars of your team could make in the wake of a World Cup. In this social media age where every athlete can project themselves over Instagram and find a voice over Twitter, and with the World Cup fast approaching, do you find that there's kind of competition for a starting place, but you're also jockeying for social media spotlight?
I mean, that is an interesting thing to think about. I think that in general, we all kind of have the similar following. Maybe not in terms of like numbers, but kind of the demographic, I guess. It's just we're all in each other's social media anyway, so it's kind of fun.
You've won an Olympic gold medal. You're a winner already. If someone said you can have one or the other and you could trade this in for a World Cup winning medal, which is more important?
People ask this question all the time.
Well, I can actually arrange it. Other people are just talking theoretically. I can sort things out.
Oh, you can make this happen?
Yeah, we're Blatter. I can speak to Blatter. But tell me the answer first.
Do you have him on one of your favorites on your cell phone that you can just, like, dial up?
He owes me one. Let's just put it that way.
Would I trade in one for the other? No, I mean, yeah, I have a gold medal, and that's incredible. It's a dream come true. And if you would have told me when I was a little child that I would have one, I probably would have believed you, but it's cool to be able to open it up and look at that medal. But at the end of the day, they're so different, you know? When you win a gold medal, you're winning with Team USA and with all those other athletes that are, you know, potentially winning medals at the same Olympics you're at, and it's a very family feeling. But the World Cup is just so different because, you know, it's soccer. It's soccer on its biggest stage, and it's the only thing competing, and the whole world gets into it. And, and it's a bigger field as well that goes to the World Cup. So they're different. I wouldn't trade one for the other, but I would really, really, really like a World Cup.
I would have guessed World Cup just because Michael Phelps doesn't have one of those. But
yeah, true.
They're less Phelpsy. Talking about Phelpsy, Sepp Blatter said today, I consider myself a little bit of a godfather of the organisation of women's football. There's a lot to do. He said women's football must market itself. It's a product. Now it's up to the ladies in this World Cup to show it's great. What do you think when you read stuff like that?
You know, he's an interesting guy. I think that, you know, people will watch the World Cup and they will be very impressed and entertained, and I think it's going to be a great show. And, you know, we do have an obligation to grow the women's game, and I think we're doing that.
I mean, I think of Sepp as less the godfather, more as kind of the Frida of world football. But from a marketing perspective, the nickname, I was looking at a list of the women's nicknames. I've got to say, some of them do need work. It's like, I've got a list in front of me. Sydney LaRue, Sid. Becky Sauerbrunn, Bex. Megan Klingberg, Klingy. Ali Krieger, she's Kriegs. Shannon Box is Boxy. I think there's some room. I know you're very busy with the Settlers of Teuton, but if you guys could get the Black Widow, the Captain Phasma, the Maz Kanata, someone's got to be the Khaleesi, the Mother of Dragons.
Yeah, who would be the Mother of Dragons on our team? Probably Piercy. She's Ma to some people. So, yeah, of Dragons. And you could argue that one of her children is kind of like a little dragon.
Little dragon. Piercy, I'm making a little mental note. I'm going to speak to Piercy's agent. Two last questions for you. GFOP John Clark, he said ahead of the US second World Cup game last summer, Alex Morgan, Sydney LaRue, and you, Kelly O'Hara, dressed up in US jerseys and tutus to cheer on the team. We asked Heather O'Reilly this also. For the US team, when you kick off in Canada, do you expect members of the US team to dress up in red, white, and blue tutus and reciprocate the support?
I absolutely do, and I think that's a great idea. I'll be disappointed if that doesn't happen. I mean, I think that they should take a page from our book because we were very hardcore supporters, and they should be too.
Do you know any of these guys? Is there much overlap between the two teams?
There actually isn't that much. I know Omar Gonzalez just from youth teams. We actually were in at the Pan Am Games. I don't even know what year. Maybe 2008, and I met him there, and stayed friends with him throughout. But that's the only one that I really have any communication with.
Well, all I know is I've seen Chris Wondolowski in a tutu, and it can't be unseen.
You have? When did that happen?
On Tuesday.
Okay.
It's just a normal Tuesday. We're hard at work casting the US World Cup winning movie biopic. From past pods, we know that Megan Rapinoe will be played by Tilda Swinton. We got an ask out to Tilda's agent. Alex Morgan, Alison Williams has signed on to play already. And we just locked up Kate Blanchett to play Heather O'Reilly.
Perfect.
Who would play you?
I'd be happy with like a Kate Mara. I like her. She's pretty cool.
Here's who we got from producer Lexi, Shailene Woodley.
Yeah, that could work.
All right, we'll put her top of the list. We will get her
Perfect.
In. This project is going to end. I don't know if it's going to be Hallmark quality, but we're working on it very hard. We are great.
I think it sounds amazing.
Last thing, Alex Morgan said, the US are not favourites for the World Cup. We're not approaching the World Cup with that mentality, but we are approaching it with a sense of quiet confidence. Can you describe how you kind of are approaching this World Cup? Give us a real sense of how you see yourselves, how you are projecting yourself, and what you think the outcome will be.
I would agree with that, actually. I think that's a perfect statement. You know, we're obviously not ranked number one in the world, so there's that, but you can never count us out, and you know, I think that quiet confidence is exactly what we possess. I feel like I possess that, but I think that that's kind of what the team feels too. So it's pretty spot on.
I love it. We love quiet confidence. We love business as usual. We wish you and the rest of the squad Godspeed. We wish you a great trip to Canada. We cannot wait to watch you this summer. Thank you so much for being with us, Kelly.
Thank you, guys.